It's Wednesday, August 5th, and this is not a drill. We start here. In several cities, students are back in class. At least, they were.
A second grader has tested positive for the coronavirus.
What happens when classrooms have to shut down within days of reopening? President Trump is cool with voting by mail in the state where he votes by mail.
So Florida's got a great Republican governor. And it had a great Republican governor.
Your guide to how ballots are being counted this year and why the president's rhetoric is changing. And a major world capital just got ripped apart.
We saw windows blown out, the facade of buildings ripped off, cars blackened.
What caused an explosion to decimate Beirut and where the city goes from here? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You might have seen clips of this interview between President Trump and Jonathan Swan from Axios on HBO.
The figure I look at is death. And death is going up now.
Okay,
and it's 1,000 a day.
If you look at death...
Yeah, it's going up again.
Let's look.
Daily death.
Take a look at some of these charts.
I'd love to.
And while they talked about a lot of things...
Right here. Here's case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that.
Why can't I do that?
You have to go by where, look, here is the United States. You have to go by the cases.
The area in which everyone seized on was the conversation about COVID-19 in America.
I think it's under control. I'll tell you what.
How? 1,000 Americans are dying a day.
They are dying. That's true. And it is what it is. But that doesn't mean we aren't doing everything we can.
It is what it is. There was immediate reaction to this. And the reason that line got so much attention was not just because it was a slip of the tongue, but because it raises the most basic of questions in this country. Is this an emergency where Americans need to drastically change our lives? Or has the COVID-19 pandemic become just this unavoidable thing to the point where we need to start living our lives as normal, just accept that it's there? Nowhere is that question more important this week than schools. A lot of us think of school as beginning around Labor Day in this country, maybe late August. That is not the case in a ton of school districts, including in Georgia.
In one school district alone, nearly 300 teachers and staff are out sick, either infected by the virus or exposed to it.
As of this week, classes are underway in the Atlanta area. Kids are at their desks. And I want to start the day with ABC Steve Osunsami, who's based in Atlanta. Steve, what have the first days of school been like?
Strange. Strange from two different standpoints. One, seeing students in masks in some cases, and two, seeing a lot of students without masks as if there was not a pandemic.
I'm a bit concerned. I heard on the first day, half of the children are wearing their mask, the other half doesn't.
I completed my work and everything went well, but I wasn't really happy with the people who weren't wearing masks.
I'm not gonna lie, it looks a little apocalyptic-y.
The other thing that's also different is people are nervous. Parents are nervous sending their kids to school, but some parents feel they have to.
It is sad that I have to make the decision to send my children and put their life in danger because you guys can't even give us a virtual option.
They don't have daycares to send these children to. Some of these parents have to both work. And they've decided to take the risk, given that these school systems are taking certain precautions and hoping for the best.
Now, face masks here in the county are mandatory for teachers and staff, but only recommended for students. Now,
I will tell you that something that just happened, we've just learned in Cherokee County, a place that started school this week, that a second grader has tested positive for the coronavirus. And because of this, the school system is now having to quarantine the entire classroom, second grade class of 20 students, and the teacher. They have to be quarantined at home for 2 weeks. This is going to be the new normal for students as they head back to school if they are actually attending school in classrooms.
Are the differences in the classroom, Steve, or do they go beyond that? Because we've seen photos of kids crammed into hallways like they would in a normal day. Some of them wearing masks, but are things changing just at the desk where the kid is, or is it sort of going to all parts of the school?
You know, what's difficult here is that every school system is sort of doing things differently. They're all on their own.
There is no option before us without risk. But after reading their plans, I feel comfortable in this decision. Whenever possible, I will allow local school leaders to determine the best plan for their local schools.
In the state of Mississippi, the governor there has now ordered all school children to wear masks in schools and all people who live in the state to wear masks in public for 2 weeks.
I will also sign an executive order today to delay the start of the academic year for grades 7 through 12 in a handful of counties. There are a handful of counties that certainly reach that threshold of being hotspots.
The Atlanta Public School District, for the most part, kids aren't going back into the classrooms. DeKalb County, Georgia, same thing.
Do you want to go back to school or do you like being on the computer?
I want to go back to school because I miss my friends and everything.
So there are a number of school districts that are teaching virtually. Some are doing what they call a hybrid, where some students are in the classroom, others are not, or they switch it up based on a schedule of some sort.
Well, and so all that makes me wonder, Steve, is there a threshold in a given school, in a given community, where authorities would go, you know what, this is a failed experiment, we're rolling it back? Because no one would want to do that, but is there a certain number of cases or a certain number of classes or quarantines at which you reach before you do say we're shutting down the school district or all the schools in the state?
Oh, no. What we're hearing from a lot of different school systems is that they're trying to be flexible.
It won't be if they test positive. They will test positive. You know, we will have students that will test positive. That's going to occur. We've had it during the summer.
And they are preparing for these types of actions, quarantining classrooms, contact tracing, and potentially, in some instances, closing down schools while they clean areas where they know an infected person or student or teacher may have been.
In Indiana, a junior high school student went to school on the first day with a pending COVID test, learning the results were positive while at school. The staff isolating the student and alerting those who have come into close contact.
We're seeing students who are testing positive at schools in Indiana, in Georgia. To see this level of concern and reasonable concern right off the bat suggests that it's going to be a very, very, very difficult fall school season.
Every time I pray, I hope like 5 more days this COVID would be gone because it's so annoying.
Yeah, and really in a lot of ways, kind of, this is just a sample size. This is a smattering of school districts. We're about to see in the coming weeks what it looks like in states across the country as the school schedule does really kick into higher gear. Steve Osunsami in Atlanta. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, sir.
Next up on Start Here, it could be the difference between election day and election week. Your definitive guide to voting by mail and why President Trump just had to change course.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up!
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now!
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
One other area where the president is super fired up is ballots in the mail.
When you do all mail-in voting ballots, you're asking for fraud.
Remember, because of COVID-19, states are really trying to ramp up programs this year that will keep voters from standing in big long lines together on election day. But in ominous tones and without any evidence, the president has argued that this is going to lead to illegitimate election results, which in turn raises the question, what would happen if election day comes and goes and we don't know the winner for days or weeks? Experts say that is a possibility. The scarier scenario, they say, is where that delay leads to candidates publicly questioning the vote tallies even after they're confirmed. Well, yesterday, in a bizarre turnaround, President Trump tweeted that mail ballots are legitimate, but really only in one particular state. ABC's legal analyst Kate Shaw is a constitutional law professor. She's been studying this issue. Kate, the president now says Florida is what? Like, Florida's chill now. What happened here?
You know, Brad, I have to believe that his people have realized that he must win Florida in order to win re-election.
So Florida's got a great Republican governor, and it had a great Republican governor. It's got Ron DeSantis, Rick Scott, two great governors. And over a long period of time, they've been able to get the absentee ballots done extremely professionally. Florida is different from other states.
Florida has a lot of elderly people living in it, and President Trump, I am sure, would like the votes of those Floridians, and a lot of them are going to be deterred from going in to vote in person, probably correctly. But by taking such aim without any foundation in evidence at absentee voting, I think the president has successfully polarized this issue so that his base is now less likely to turn out to vote absentee than are Joe Biden's voters. And that actually is a real problem for President Trump.
I'll be an absentee voter. We have a lot of absentee voters, and it works. So we're in favor of absentee, but it's much different.
Well, and can you kind of break down the president's argument for me? Because he was drawing this distinction for a while, that there are really two types of ballots in the mail. There's the kind that you have to request, and there's the kinds that just get delivered to you, right? So absentee ballots, like every state has a version of voting by mail, but you have to request that ballot. Some states you have to have like a reason to request that ballot. Other states, it just gets sent to you. So why is that such a big deal to President Trump, or why was it such a big deal before yesterday?
You know, so people sometimes do use the term absentee voting and voting by mail interchangeably, and I don't think that's wrong. But it is true that as a technical matter, absentee voting refers to voting where you have to request an absentee ballot, either by showing some special circumstances or need, or in an increasing number of states, without any excuse at all, but you have to make the request. So that's absentee voting.
I signed an executive order about an hour ago that will allow every registered voter in the state of California to receive a mail-in ballot.
Vote by mail typically refers to those states where everyone is eligible automatically to vote by mail, and states either automatically mail everybody an absentee ballot application, or in some states actually send the ballot to every registered voter in the state. So those are the true vote by mail states. And another number of states have been holding elections that way for years. And you know what? There hasn't been any rampant fraud in mail-in voting.
But as you say, Kate, like these are real ballots. These are not applications somewhere. These are as real as the things you fill out in the voting booth. And people have said, oh, I got two sent to me, like one under one name and one under my married name or unregistered voters. So does the president have a case that there's the potential for shenanigans there?
I don't think there are any legitimate reasons to worry, honestly. You know, democracy is messy. So whether we're talking about voting in person, where you sometimes end up having been purged from the voter rolls, or you show up to vote in one place and you're told you need to go somewhere else. So that happens. And it's not fraud. It's just the messiness of democracy. And with mail-in voting, that kind of thing happens too. So people get two ballots or no ballots, or a ballot goes to the wrong address.
It's only an irregularity. There's no doubt about that.
Commissioner Al Schmidt said they found no clear evidence of fraud in the small sample check they did of the records we provided them. Most of the issues, he said, were human errors, such as a poll worker scanning the wrong name, a person signing in the wrong spot, or a son voting in his dead father's place.
But the thing about these states that administer their elections mostly by mail is that they have very robust fraud checks on the back end. So they mail out ballots, and when they receive these ballots back, they check for signature matches. They make sure that the actual ballots are the ones they mailed out, as opposed to some, you know, imposter ballot that the president and Attorney General Barr have suggested might be out there. I've never seen any evidence that these things are real, but if they were, states have established processes for identifying and weeding out fraud.
Yeah, which makes you think, like, just because somebody gets two ballots in the mail does not mean we're seeing lots of people fill out two ballots or three ballots. Like, it just does not happen.
And in fact, if anyone tried, the election officials would disqualify right. the second and third ballots. So I do think it's important to underscore that the president suggesting that this is a problem doesn't make it real. And he's not pointed to a shred of evidence that this is actually any kind of widespread problem.
In Nevada today, for the first time, voters had to mail or drop off their ballots. And in Georgia, the Republican Secretary of State shifting the election to almost entirely by mail.
The one thing, though, that people should be aware of is there is a very real possibility that we're not going to know on election night who the winner of the election is. And that's because this election is just going to look different from every other election in the modern era. States are moving very significantly to vote by mail. So let me give you one example. Wisconsin usually has about 6% of its population vote by mail. In the April presidential primary, it had 75% of voters choose to vote by mail. So these are states that just have never handled this volume of mail-in voting before, and it's just going to take them time to tabulate all these ballots.
In 2016, a record 1 in 5 Americans voted by mail. November numbers could far surpass that.
I think it could approach 100 million.
And that's roughly half the electorate.
Yeah, I think it could get that high. It could even go above that.
And, you know, in a lot of states, Brad, it's actually the case that state officials aren't allowed to start counting absentee ballots until Election Day. So there's essentially no way for all of these states to count all of their absentee ballots on Election Day, operating in this unprecedented environment.
I want to have the result of the election. I don't want to be waiting around for weeks and months and literally, potentially, if you really did it right, years, because you'll never know.
Now, that doesn't mean there's no chance we'll know the winner on election night. If the margins are big enough, you know, there may be projections that are very sound. But everyone should be prepared for the possibility that this isn't really going to be an election day. This is going to be an election week or possibly even an election month.
Well, and so just based on all these points you've made so far, can I just spell out a scenario and you can tell me if it's just wildly off base or not? But I'm wondering if Democrats are more on board with mail-in balloting. They are applying for them at higher rates, and that is what we've seen so far. And Republicans aren't, in some part because President Trump has discouraged them up till now from thinking of them as legitimate. Is there a scenario where on election night, all the Republicans have shown up in person during the day, they voted for President Trump, we see those numbers first, and then slowly but surely, the numbers come in through the mail, totally legitimate ballots, but they are now propping up Joe Biden? And over the course of hours or days, President Trump is saying, hey, it looks like I'm getting robbed here. Is that a crazy thing to envision?
So, Brad, I think that's a very distinct possibility. And the president can make whatever accusations he wants. He's already sort of laid the groundwork. So I think that what you're suggesting is actually pretty likely to come to pass on election night. And I think what most matters is how we respond to it.
But Florida's done a great job, and we have total confidence that if you mail in your ballot in Florida, it's going to matter.
And when we think about a state like Florida, it may be the case that elderly Republican voters are just too scared to go to the polls to vote in person.
Your campaign puts out emails telling people to vote by mail.
Correct.
Your daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, she did robocalls in California saying it's safe and secure, mail-in voting.
And the president and his team are realizing that, and that is why we are seeing his rhetoric begin to change around absentee voting.
Yeah, we saw what happened in Tulsa when all of a sudden the Trump re-election team was like, oh, no, people are not showing up like we thought they would. Kate Shaw, giving us lots to think about. Thanks so much for the insight, Kate.
Thanks, Brad.
One minute, it was some flames and a plume of smoke. The next, it was a full-scale disaster. Yesterday, Beirut, Lebanon, an explosion tore through the city, obliterating not just a factory along the coastline, but everything around it. Let's go to ABC's senior foreign correspondent, Ian Pannell, now. And Ian, this truly just had to be seen to be believed. It was so large. Can you describe how devastating this blast was?
Yeah, Brad, I've seen many explosions, but I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. The scenes are truly, truly shocking. there was a fire underway at some building which is down in the port area of Beirut. Beirut produces very little. The port is super important and it's normally very busy. It looked from at least one video taken by someone nearby as if there were some small detonations taking place, some crackling. There had been a suggestion, not verified, that perhaps it was fireworks. The next minute, there is just the biggest explosion you've ever seen or heard. People videoed this from multiple angles because, of course, they saw the fire was taking place. And you just see this enormous, volatile, massive explosion. This huge mushroom cloud that just bursts out from the site and seems to swamp over large parts of Beirut.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And you can hear the reaction from these various videos of people's gasps, people shrieking.
It's okay, baby.
Please. I saw something flash and I couldn't hear anymore.
As this thing just explodes everywhere, the damage, the radius of it was truly shocking.
The door, the walls, the glass facades, totally blown out.
Smoke filling the streets that were strewn with debris, glass everywhere. You saw blooded people nearby wandering through these clouds of smoke, desperately crying for help. The hospitals were rapidly overwhelmed. And we're hearing significant numbers of people killed and injured.
Okay, so what was it, Ian?
That, of course, is the key question.
Well, it would seem like it, based on the explosion. I've met with some of our great generals, and they just seemed to feel that it was. This was not a some kind of a manufacturing explosion type of event.
Now, of course, immediate suspicions are that given Beirut's history and given the tensions between Israel and Hezbollah, the militant group that controls the government in Lebanon, that there could have been some kind of foul play. The Israelis seems to have put a lot of distance between themselves and that theory. And in fact, the interior minister and other government ministers are suggesting that it was a catastrophic accident rather than a conspiracy, that perhaps a warehouse there had been used to store highly explosive ammonium nitrate. For those who don't know, ammonium nitrate is a key component in homemade bombs. They're used in IEDs, improvised explosive devices. It was used by Timothy McVeigh in the Oklahoma City bombing. So it can be absolutely devastating. There have been suggestions that there was a significant amount of this secured, but not safely, at this site, and that could explain why this explosion was quite so enormous.
This was a, seems to be, according to them, they would know better than I would, but they seem to think it was a attack. It was a bomb of some kind, yes.
I was going to say, Ian, because immediately in Beirut, of all places, there are suspicions because this is the home of Hezbollah, right? It has been in the sights of terrorist groups, of foreign governments even. So, I mean, what happens next for this city and how much of that depends on whether it could have been deliberate?
This will be devastating. Beirut, Lebanon has been beset by corrupt government after corrupt government. The banking system has collapsed. People struggle to get hold of money. Unemployment is rampant.
Public authorities, public services here are not good. Last month, there was almost no state power where people were relying on generators.
Beirut at the moment is struggling to keep up with the coronavirus infections in the country. The hospitals are full. And then they get this on top. Will this lead to substantial change in Lebanon that is very much needed, or will it actually lead to further division and chaos in the country, which is what many people fear? We're seeing lots of offers of assistance from the US State Department, even interestingly from the Israelis, which I think is unlikely to be accepted, but perhaps this can be used to turn something positive in the country, to try and build something out of this chaos. Because the devastation, as I say, is the last thing any country needs. But Lebanon really cannot cope with it at this moment. And it may be so much pressure that the system completely collapses.
Yeah, and we talk about explosions in foreign countries where, you know, devastation is felt hundreds of yards away and people are killed blocks away. This is something completely different. Miles upon miles of devastation in a world capital. Ian Pannell breaking it down. Thanks so much, Ian.
Yeah, thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. Serious question. Which will we get first, a vaccine or some Clorox wipes? Earlier this year, ABC News spoke to the president of Clorox, who acknowledged how supermarkets had just run out of disinfectant wipes.
And here's the big question. When can you walk into a store and they are there and you can buy them whenever you need them?
Yes, I know that's the question on everybody's mind. We will expect improvement coming this summer. It will all depend on the demand.
Well, summer is here, and you still cannot reliably walk into a store and buy them. In fact, now the company's saying they might not be stocked up until next year. They say a couple things are at play here. One, this used to be a big product, but not a huge one. Well, in the span of a few weeks, demand rose sixfold and still hasn't gone down.
Unfortunately, they're being snagged just about as soon as they hit shelves. Many times within minutes.
Two, it's not the chemical here that's the problem. Anyone can make a type of bleach. The issue is the fabric involved is also used to make surgical masks, hospital gowns. It's tough for any company, even Clorox, to get their hands on this stuff. In the meantime, people are turning to competitors or even homemade solutions, which can get dicey when you start improvising with cleaning chemicals. We don't ever want you touching your eyes and mouth at this point, particularly not if you've been pouring bleach on Kleenex boxes. Start here tomorrow. Hit us up with a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help other people find the show. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.